Okay, hi everybody, and welcome to our work with a treatise on cosmic fire in depth. We have quite a full evening ahead of us. We'll work some in these foundational esoteric occult matters, and then we will also have at 8 o'clock our vigil, which will be a little bit different tonight, and maybe the next night. It's night here anyway, because we'll have a chance to read and examine some of the things that DK has said about the attitude one should hold as a member of the new group of world servers, and especially in the present battle. Now, you know, these things were written in connection with the Second World War. And it was a huge battle involving the forces of cosmic evil. We sense that there is another attack of a kind from these very forces at this time, trying to stifle the possibility of the will of individuals and groups and nations working through. The an anti-democratic movement, which involves some of the same old dictatorship that we found in Rome and in France and at the time of the Second World War, especially. And we have, therefore, to stand steadily while these things work out. So we have some references, and we'll have a chance to discuss your impressions about them and a short meditation that will be coming up at the usual the usual link that we will be using. And I think that link has been sent to you through the calendar, but at the same time we might, I'm trying to think of whether we can, send that to you. It ends in 09, and probably you have been using it. And if Michael, you would be so kind as to put it in the chat box, that would be a big help for us. So let's, in terms of our steadfastness here, let's see, I do want to, I don't seem to be seeing, okay, there it is. There it is. So, Michael, do you see the great invocation number 2? Is that up?
And, yes, it is.
Yeah,
yes,
okay, it is. Very good. All right, well, let's just, to express our continuity, we will use that at the beginning of these various programs, and we'll be focusing very much on the whole process in another couple of hours or so at the normal link for these vigils, USA vigils. Okay. And there is, Michael has put the USA vigil link into the chat box, so you can copy that out if you don't have it already, but probably most of you have it. Okay, so the Lords of Liberation and the second of the great invocations. Let the Lords of Liberation issue forth. Let them bring succor to the sons of men. Let the rider from the secret place come forth and coming save. Come forth, O Mighty One. Let the souls of men awaken to the light, and may they stand with massed intent. Let the fiat of the Lord go forth. The end of woe has come. Come forth, O Mighty One. The hour of service of the saving force has now arrived. Let it be spread abroad, O Mighty One. Let light and love and power and death fulfill the purpose of the coming one. The will to save is here. The love to carry forth the work is widely spread abroad. The active aid of all who know the truth is also here. Come forth, O Mighty One, and blend these three. Construct a great defending wall. The rule of evil now must end. Our work remains at least until Inauguration Day, and then we'll see, because the real problem is the infection of two kinds. The COVID infection, which is out of control in the United States especially, and the infection of the mass mind with glamour, and to a certain extent with illusion. We have a situation in which two people with criminal charges and pending sentences before them have been pardoned simply out of cronyism and transactionism. And these two people are now calling for the imposition of martial law. And they say they're not fooling, they're serious about it. And others backing this up are serious about it. So that under a situation in which the Constitution is set aside, abrogated for a time, and who knows for how long, and under a situation in which the votes that have been cast do not count, a re-election would take place, under the rule of the army or the armed forces, under the control of the present occupant of the White House. Now, we must not think that in the repertoire of a desperate narcissist, that could not happen. But tonight we will also be discussing a bit later how we deal with evident evil from an internal perspective, because it may not be exactly in the manner that we anticipate. Meanwhile, just to welcome you here for our ongoing work, we have Andy and Anne Veronica and Anne Parker and Annette Astra, Aurea, Karsten, Cindy, Francois, Heidi, Heike, Ishtar, Joe, Garso, and Joe Waltz in our communications team. Joan, Karen, Kathy, and Lori. We have Manish and Martin, and Miro, and Nathalie, and Nasa, Nolene, Risto, Sanjay, Vivian, and Zenaidi, and on the staff side, Michael and Tuya, assisting us. So welcome everyone, and let's look a little bit at cosmic fire, which sort of is the substratum of everything that we're doing. If we understand that seminal book, we will understand a great deal concerning, the foundation of all the Tibetans' other writings. And of course, we can relate it as well to the many issues that we are dealing with at this time. So I think whatever page it was on, was it page 55? I believe, yes, here we are on page 55. And then to make it a little more visible, here we are. So we have finished a little section prior to this. And what I would like to encourage, if you really have the desire to study these matters in depth, please go to Makara, where, let's say, the first 1,000 or a bit more pages are laid out in great detail with written commentary. The commentary is rather dense, and so it's not really possible to take it point by point in a program like this. But we can go over in a more spontaneous way the kinds of things that are said in the more detailed commentary. It all depends on how deeply you want to study this seminal book. I've been through the book, I think, three times, and a lot of it was while in motion, you know, listening on my, in those days we called them Walkmen, you know, and listening time after time to what one of the students of the Arcane School had done with recording simply the words of Master DK, which is a great way, of course, to listen to it. But when you're dealing with that, with what I'm trying to present here, there will be amplification and connection between different points. So we begin and do a little work here on page 55. By the way, 55 is a good number, you know. It's if you total up the alpha number of the word Sanat, you get 55, you know, the first great Kumara, Sanat Kumara. So it's always a special number to me when I see it. So we're dealing here with the three channels. I imagine they're kundalinic channels, and with fire elementals and devas, the elementals being a lower form of life, which are largely involutionary and have to be transformed into evolutionary devas. Even as a human being, we are like elementals compared with certain great beings, And when we reach the fourth initiation, the great renunciation or the crucifixion, however you want to call it, we take on more the semblance of Devic life than of elemental life when compared to these greater beings. We have to look at the relativity of everything. A great planet, great in terms of our understanding, can be relatively the tiniest little speck, and even a solar logos, a great deity indeed compared with our caliber of development, can be likened to a crystal compared to certain higher, greater beings. So we always keep in mind the law of analogy and the relativity which we derive when we study the law of analogy. These are relativistic studies, and the great science of relations, which seems to cover so much, you know, it covers chakras, planets, solar logoi, cosmic logoi, supercosmic logoi, galaxies. The great science of relations is our foundational study. This is different than when we consider identify as being, because there we're entering, if I can call it, the science of non-relations. In other words, we move from studying the many to not only studying the one, but identifying as the one. Now, the three channels for the fire. From the very use of the term sheath, it's an, you know, outer covering of some kind, it will be noted that we are considering those fires which manifest through the medium of those externalities, of those veils of substance which hide and conceal the inner reality. Now, one of the really important things is that we cease from the error of thinking that the outer that the outer is real. Of course, everything is real in a certain sense. But, you know, within the realm of relativity, that which is outer does drop away. And here's the question for any of us. Do we really have a convincing inner sense of the inner deity or inner God, which we are, as independent from the sheaths through which that God is manifesting? Well, just for a moment, think of yourself as an inner being. Of course, eventually, you know, we are only being itself, but I'm still in the relative world now, the in-universe relative world. And these personality sheaths reclothe us cycle after cycle, and they will inevitably drop away. They are appropriated by the inner God on the way into incarnation, and they are relinquished at the end of any incarnation and return to the reservoir. So we really are the inner reality. And do we know that? And do we have the sense of ourselves as being that inner reality, which so often we call the soul? Now, it's really pretty obvious to me that in this great battle for democracy, there are those who have no notion whatsoever of being a soul. What they see in the mirror, what they feel sentiently, the thoughts running through their mind, their head, they think that's what they are. And they have no true feeling for being the inner reality. Now, if we are going to be successful in teaching anybody, we have to help the people understand that in a very subtle way, they are this inner reality and everything else. You know, look at DK's word. It's a wonderful word. The word is externality. An externality. That is something that I, let's see if I can make that happen. Oh, there it is. So he's speaking in philosophical language. And the main thing is to avoid the mistake of confusing the externality with the internality. We've been told in the Bible that the kingdom of heaven is within. That means it is an internal factor, an internality. And it's not per se a sheath in the dense physical body of the planetary logos or solar logos. Well, let's just say, the causal body, the egoic lotus, is actually still within the dense physical body of the solar logos, but perhaps not in the dense physical body of the planetary logos, which may have, for a dense physical body, the lower 18 subplanes. I think it's important to get that idea, and maybe you already have it, you know. But the lower 18 subplanes are definitely the dense physical body of our planetary logos. The lower 21 subplanes, including the causal body, egoic lotus, are definitely the dense physical body, cosmically considered, of the solar logos. But then we have the ambiguity regarding the three highest subplanes. And perhaps they are a transitional area, the beginning of something etheric when it comes to the planetary logos, even though when comparing these three to the solar logos, they are in the dense area. So where we're doing a lot of our development is in the subplanes of the higher mental plane, and especially, in all of them really, but especially in subplane number 2 and number 1. Which begins to bring us into that highly impersonal, non-local sphere that we call the spiritual triad. Okay. You know, just to remind ourselves of those things. We shall not here take up the subject of the sheaths on the higher planes. Well, obviously, then they exist, don't they? In other words, He tells us that after the second initiation, and especially after the third, we begin, under the influence of Neptune, to organize the Buddhic vehicle or the Buddhic sheath. And it seems to me that the organization of the atmic sheath comes later still. And the monadic sheath, or the temple of Ezekiel, already exists, but probably it undergoes certain modifications and enhancements, which allows it to reach levels of tension, which otherwise we simply cannot. So we're not really, you know, and once the causal body goes at the fourth degree, the higher mental body has to be organized. And that would complete the spiritual triad. So even though there are vehicles or sheaths for the higher planes, they are mentioned in connection with the various creative hierarchies. He doesn't really attend to them at this point. But we're simply dealing, but he says, we shall not take up the higher sheaths, let's say ending with the monadic sheath, or even with that sheath we might call the sheath of the liberated monad, which would be within the vehicle of the Father, the Son, or the Holy Ghost. You see, here, I'll go back to this. Once the Temple of Ezekiel is destroyed, the monad is not destroyed, but a new type of locality for the monad arises, and it's basically going to be in one of these three triangles. Those would be the three major monadic rays. He sometimes says we have seven monadic rays possible, and sometimes three. And I don't know if any one of us, we may have a slight feeling about what type of monad we belong to on the monadic plane. But I wonder how many of us can determine whether our origin on the logoic plane is the Father, the Son, or the Holy Ghost. I suspect, you know, that we will not be especially accurate in determining that. So anyway, there is such a thing as a liberated monad, and the monad continues to make its progress over huge cycles on the cosmic astral and cosmic mental plane, and some even as far as the cosmic Buddhic plane. If let's say that you're on the path of the planetary logoi, that means that you and a number of your fellow monads will become a planet, a solar logos, excuse me. Your monad will, as it were, journey on the way of higher evolution to the cosmic Buddhic plane. And I think, it's just a hunch, but on the path of absolute sonship, which is the highest of the given paths, there are others, a couple of new ones, but he doesn't name them, of the given paths, he seems to say it's a cosmic mental destination, but I believe it is cosmic atmic and is ruled by Saturn. Well, that's just an aside. Okay. Now, So we won't take up the material, however subtle it may be, that comprises the sheaths of the higher faculties on the higher planes. But we will simply deal with the fires that animate the three lower vehicles, mind, emotions, etheric, physical, the physical body in its two divisions, etheric and dense, the emotional astral body, and the mental sheath. And I think especially that part of the mental sheath, which has to do with the personality, i.e. the lower concrete mind. It is frequently overlooked by the casual student, and may we not be that. May we be the attentive student who reads carefully. It is frequently overlooked by the casual student that both the astral and the mental bodies are material. That is, they are composed of atoms of a particular nature and different degrees of complexity, always getting more and more simple the higher we rise onto the planes. And they are, he says, just as material in their own way as is the dense body. And also that the substance of which they are composed is animated by a triple fire, as is the physical. And I suppose we had the internal and the radiatory fires, and he gave one other type of fire, a kind of an elemental fire. So I'm going to just, you know, remind us of that. Now, could we say that the Buddhic plane is material? I think we can. Is the Atmic plane material? Yes, it is. And so for the monadic plane, and so for the logoic plane. But the material which is found there and which comprises the ascending vehicles, the ever more sensitive vehicles, is more rarefied and simpler and less aggregated than the material found on the lower planes, or we could call them the lower cosmic subplanes. Now, I can't answer that question about the materiality of the cosmic astral plane or the cosmic mental plane, but you know, when you see that there is a causal body for the solar logos on the cosmic mental plane, well, is it made of something? Is there some kind of extremely refined matter out of which that causal body for the solar logos is constructed? Does it exist? The causal body of the Earth logos is found on the third subplane of the cosmic mental. Is it material? And if it's material, what is the material? Is it, you know, I know I'm getting into things here, but is it a subdivision, that material higher up, is it a subdivision of what is called a bubble in the koilon, which is the smallest material unit on the cosmic physical plane? Let me see if I can explain that. So, when we start talking about this whole cosmic physical plane is material, and the smallest unit of construction that is found on it is called a bubble in the koilon. Now, is that bubble divisible when it comes to the cosmic astral plane, and still more divisible when it comes to the cosmic mental? I mean, these are questions we cannot really answer, but this is the cosmic material plane, cosmic physical. But from another point of view, this whole thing is the super cosmic etheric physical plane. And on we go. I remember Tuya once made some maps of all this, and she had to stand on a chair holding sheet after sheet after sheet, showing at least some of the relationships of the planes, cosmic, super cosmic, super, super cosmic, whatever you want to call them, until the 10th dimension. We never got that far, because I think you would have had to stand on the roof or in some tree in order to make it happen. But let's just say that we are studying the very smallest part of the material construction of the local cosmos systems which surround us and interpenetrate us. We don't even have the language for it, frankly. Now, going on a little bit, see, basically, let me make a summary principle. We want to move from density to etericity, from density to ethereality, if you will. We are kind of suffocating spiritually in the non-principled, cosmically non-principled, densified worlds of the lower 18 or the lower 21 subplanes. We want to move into ethereality. Now, that's what the masters have done, and their consciousness is right there in the cosmic ethers, which to us represent truly the spiritual planes. To the masters, it's home. And they look even higher. They look beyond the cosmic physical plane to the day when, at the eighth initiation, they can begin to make that figure eight, which takes them into the cosmic astral plane and back again to the cosmic physical, and then into the cosmic astral and then back again, until at the ninth initiation, and for a time, they refuse. It's called the initiation of refusal. They refuse to have anything to do with the cosmic physical plane as they pass on the way of higher evolution to greater training. Now, they may come back, of course, just the way the solar angels who supervise our development have come back. In the physical body, says the Tibetan, we have the fires of the lower nature, the animal plane, centralized at the base of the spine. They are situated at a spot which stands in relation to the physical body as the physical sun to the solar system, a great point of heat, internal heat, a great point of internal heat. So he's given us an analogy here that the physical sun is to its solar system the way this fire centralizes itself within the base of the spine. This central point of heat radiates in all directions. You know, without it, we couldn't be an incarnation. And when it burns out or is withdrawn, we leave incarnation. This central point of heat radiates in all directions, using the spinal column as its main artery, but working in close connection with certain central ganglia. You know, those are nerve tangles, wherever located, and have a special association with the spleen. So here DK is speaking as the anatomist, you know, one who has made a deep, deep study of the dense physical body and is in a position to tell us how these energies work, not only physically, but in a manner that is psychophysical, spiritual. So as esoteric healers, you know, when that time comes, we will be apprised of those locations and those dynamics. Now they, you know, it was a big day whenever it happened in 1899 in the magazine, The Theosophist, included in this book are a number of those references that come from The Theosophist. And I'm not saying that right now we can make a big study of all the things that are put there, but because it would take some hours, I think, for us to do it. But this is not an easily comprehended chart. It's called The Evolution of Matter. And it seems to be in relation to the logos of a solar system, beginning with the union of spirit and matter, which is, he says, inseparate and undifferentiated. Now, that's only relatively so, but when looking at what emanates as a solar system, this is the least differentiated part. And then the separation for purposes of dynamic interaction of spirit and matter. And then the third logos, the active one, imparts the gunas, or the attributes, to root matter. Now, this gets a little complex, but the question is, at that level where a solar logos is beginning to generate its system, do we really have pure root matter, mula prakriti, or is it only found at, let's say, at the very top of the universe, so to speak, you know, before the universe itself goes into differentiation? Here he calls tamas stability. We oftentimes call it inertia, but stability is maybe a nicer way of talking about it. Rajas is activity, and sattva, yes, harmonious rhythm and harmony. We're dealing with tanmatras, which are considered to be powers or vibration. And they arise sevenfoldedly from the solar logos, who is the creator, or I like to think of it as the self-becomer in the question of creating the planes and subplanes of a solar system. See, we're way down here on the level of a solar system. We're not dealing with anything, you know, galactic or super galactic or entirely universal. So many people just jump into those high levels speculatively, and they really, really know nothing about what they're talking about. And we get into a lot of glamour, and we start to project human-like figures onto the galactic level, you know. All of that, we just have to stand back and say, well, maybe the masters of the wisdom know a little bit about the qualities of nearby galaxies, and that in a very general sense. But we know nothing. The one about whom naught may be said, the first of those ones, is tiny compared to a galaxy. So we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves. Now, these tanmatras are powers of vibration which are conferred. And we have, like I say, I hesitate to get into the hour or two that it would take to make some speculations about this chart. Maybe I've always avoided it just a little bit. I seem to understand other charts a bit better. But we're talking about Fohat and the whirling motion of the third logos, which digs holes in space. Basically, it's creating vortices. So this energy of the logos as whirling motion of inconceivable rapidity, it's got to have a number attached to it, one day we'll know, digs holes in space. And space, it looks like the English is a little faulty here, but space is the root matter, or at least root matter of a certain degree of purity compared with the rest of the matter on the cosmic physical plane. That has yet to be generated. It's all going to be generated from the top down. And this vortex of life, encased in a film of root matter, as I say, not the absolutely pure Mula Prakriti, but something that is related to that pure Mula Prakriti, is the primary atom called Adi Tattva. Adi means first. And the rest of the planes and subplanes are built of this primary atom. And when we're talking about a primary atom, we're still dealing with the cosmic physical plane here. If we're dealing with planes that are cosmic planes beyond that, I'm not sure that's the case here. By the combination of this atomic matter, the six lower subplanes, which are cosmic subplanes on the cosmic physical plane, the six lower subplanes of the highest plane are formed. Now, the highest plane will have seven subplanes, and so will the next down and the next down and so forth. Now, when you compare, now, for instance, here, let me, like I said, I'm going to be wary about getting too much into this, okay? But nevertheless, it would make a very interesting study. We have names. We have the Attic, and we saw Adi Tattva. We have Anupadaka, which we normally associate with the monadic plane. Then we have Nirvanic plane, and it'll probably be called something else in the other map. We have Buddhic. It's called intuitional. We've switched languages here because we have, you know, Adi, Anupadaka, Nirvanic, and now we're in English. Intuitional, I think it's related to the term Vayu, which means air. Mental plane, astral plane, and etheric dense planes. Okay, so the language is not exactly consistent in the maps that we are using. But when we check out how this is done in the Theosophist, and by the way, I have found errors in some of these charts. I've pointed them out to you, how Chit and Ananda seem to be reversed. It's just a mistake as far as I can see. But so these are not done by the Tibetan, but they are included by the Tibetan as being indicative. So the first Tanmatra operates on the, we would call it the logoic plane or the Attic plane. And here it's called Maha Paranirvanic. Now, I don't doubt for a minute that we can transpose these words into a whole higher set of supercosmic planes. I think the model is good, and we can apply it to the cosmic physical, we can apply it to the supercosmic planes as well, the super cosmic etheric physical, and on and on. The third Tanmatra, see, what does it say here? That Anupadaka Tattva has to do with Anupadaka, the monadic plane, the sixth plane. And they call it kind of interesting, para-nirvanic. Now, nirvanic is a term that we do use in, as the Tibetan presents it to us. The atmic plane is nirvanic. And once we reach that plane, then many of the things the Buddha said about nirvana begin to coalesce and be expressed. And the word para means beyond. So it makes sense that the Akashic plane, which is the Anupadaka plane, would be para-nirvanic, beyond nirvanic. And then if you want something beyond nirvanic, you get Maha, which means great. You know, Maha Atma, let's see, great soul, Mahatma, the great one. So the Maha Paranirvanic is logically beyond the Paranirvanic. These are just different names for the thing that we usually use. Now, however, here terminology begins to be a little different. And let's say once we have the atomic vibration on the first subplane of any of these planes, we can generate by combination, by the power of numerical combination, we can generate the subplanes which have matter of different degrees of complexity. But strangely, when we get to the third plane, which we call Brahmic or Nirvanic, instead of something like, you know, Nirvanic Tattvic, I mean, I don't know the language, but, you know, nirvana and tattva together, we get the word akasha. And the word akasha in the Tibetans' expressions has to do with the second subplane on which the great monadic circles are found. So for some reason, akasha tattva is connected with the nirvanic plane. You would expect it to be connected with the second subplane. Now, if we go to okay, I'm gonna take a little trip here and hope that I can make my point. This is okay. So, well, wait a second. I'm sorry. This may not be exactly what I want. I'm going to go this way and get rid of our foundation map for a moment. But I assume you see what I see. This particular plane is the monadic plane, and it's emphasizing the different shaktis here. But this is the Anupadaka plane, but it's also the plane of akasha, or sound. And so this nirvanic plane, it's unusual to have the word akasha associated with the nirvanic or atmic plane. Somewhere there's going to be a tabulation which mentions that the second plane is akashic, and the third plane is aetheric, A-E-T-H-E-R-I-C, aetheric. Not etheric, but aetheric. So we can draw this particular map into the considerations that we are now examining. Okay. Oh, maybe that was it. Could that be it? See, this is where the mistake is made. And here, whoever is the author is doing the same thing. He's calling this third or nirvanic plane. As a matter of fact, he doesn't even call it that here, but he's calling it akasha tattva. Whereas normally akasha, the sounding, the musical ether, is associated with the monadic plane. These are complex things, but they are not necessarily devoid of errors, or at least different terminology. When we get to the Buddhic plane, he's using the word that represents air, or vayu tattva, and then by combination of the Buddhic permanent atom, all kinds of more complex configurations which represent various subplanes are created. The sixth tanmatra has to do with mind. It appears. Yeah, I think I'm correct on that. And Agni is associated with the mental plane, and by the highest sub, the highest atom on the first subplane, all the rest of the atoms of the mental plane are created by combination. And let's see, what is interesting here, you find it down here. The tattva, or atomic matter of a plane, is the result of a vortex set up by the tattva of the plane next above in the coarsest aggregation of that next higher plane. So basically, from the seventh sub-tattva, the first tattva of the next lower plane is generated. The vortex being caused by a new tanmatra sent forth from Ishvara, and Ishvara, in this case, is the Sota Logos. So there's a lot of complexity here. And we even bring in the astral plane with the seventh tanmatra, and not much seems to be going on with the dense. He calls it etheric, he calls it physical, but it is etheric physical. So each time the vortex continues, which are our many chakras, starting from the highest vortex on the cosmic physical plane and all the way down on every subplane, it is the result of a new impulse from the Sota Logos, or a new tanmatra. Now you can understand why I didn't want to get into it, and unfortunately, why I did get into it. But in any case, although this is called physical, and the idea of it is dense, prithiva tattva, it does include the etheric atoms, because the etheric atoms are considered to be physical. So these, it seems like the seventh tanmatra accounts not only for what's going on the astral plane and its subplanes, but it seems to carry down into the etheric and dense physical levels. The dense physical level is not principled. So you can see there are variations, but what's the main thing to take away from here is that from the top down, what we call matter is generated by the combination of tiny units into ever more complex units and an impulse called tanmatra coming from the Sota Logos, which continues the vortex as it descends. The matter is created and the vortex is created because holes, vortices, are dug into this material demonstration. And that basically is the work of Fohat. And here is an idea of how Fohat works. It is the third of the Logoi. Well, anyway, some discrepancies with what Master DK seems to give us. One of the things that, you know, is kind of interesting, and I'm not sure how we solve it, is that the seventh tanmatra relates to the astral plane, and it continues down into the etheric physical. And the two, the tanmatra here with two impulses seems to connect with the tanmatra above with two impulses. So there is some terminological difference operating here, but I think we can come close enough to understanding that Vayu is the airplane, the Buddhic, and that Agni, Agni Tattva, is the fire plane, the mental, And it looks like this apastatva is related to the principle of water and also to the densest manifestation. Now, sometimes we are told the astral plane does not exist. But what that means to me is not that the matter of the astral plane does not exist, but that the configurations on the astral plane which man has made, that those are not real, but the matter itself is real. All right, now what we've looked at here, in the physical body we have the fires of the lower nature, the animal plane, and we've seen an analogy, and I think we can, well, it gets, you know, quite interesting here as we go, but we're over time. So I'm just going to read a little bit about the etheric body, and we'll begin here next time that we get together. And, something happened here. When you're doing it this way, you might run into a little bit of trouble. So I'm going to say that this is, no, it's not working for me. Maybe this will work for me. Yeah, okay. So this will be, please move this window away from the shared application. Okay, I don't know how to do that, but I'm just going to say, beginning. Does anybody have an idea of how I can?
Would you like to change your screen share?
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe that would help. It doesn't. It's not even there. No, it doesn't show. It does not show. Maybe that will show. Do you see it now?
There it is.
Okay. Beginning on the 11th of December 20, and it will be a morning session. Okay. So that should be enough right there. Okay. Now, I'm just going to read about the etheric body, then we're going to go on, and it'll be time to offer thoughts or, you know, questions and so forth. So, in the etheric body, which, now, this is really interesting, which is an exact replica of its denser counterpart. Sometimes, you know, you sit down, you try to figure out how is that so, but we take his word for it. We have the organ of active or radiatory fire, and as is well known, the vehicle of prana. Well, that's probably going to be especially the spleen, but it's going to be not only the spleen, but the two other members of the pranic triangle. So, you know, we have something physical we've just discussed, and the analogy there is to the solar, to the sun itself. And now, in the etheric body, we have the organ of active or radiatory fire, the vehicle of prana. Its function is to store up the rays of radiatory light and heat, which are secured from the sun, and to transmit them, via the spleen, in other words, the etheric chakra via the dense spleen, to all parts of the physical body. Okay, I'm going to make that the same color. Might as well. Okay. Hence, in the future, it will come to be recognized that the spine and the spleen are of the utmost importance to the physical well-being of man. There are already, you know, obviously naturopaths and chiropractors who really know this and practice this. And that when the spinal column is duly adjusted and aligned, and when the spleen is freed from congestion and in a healthy condition, there will be little trouble in the dense physical body. That is really something to think about. When the physical furnace burns brightly, and when the fuel of the body, the pranic rays, is adequately assimilated, the human frame will function as desired, and this will occur. I'm putting a couple of pieces of information together around the time of the third initiation. I mean, you know, you do have higher initiates making sacrifices on behalf of their students and those they serve, you know, and they die just like anybody else, and things go wrong for them too. But he tells us that from the third degree onward, the relationship to disease is much different, and usually one does not contract disease from the third degree onward. And so this burning brightly, this right adjustment, this decongestion of the spleen, this use of the splenic chakra, the assimilation of the fuel properly, all of this, we might say, comes into right adjustment around the time of the third initiation, when the usual sicknesses do not assail the man anymore. Okay, friends, that's going to be it. And page 57. And let's see. Well, you can understand why I don't want to get into all that I've done here. This right here is the end of our work. There will be little trouble. And so this is where we end our reading and commentary for today. And let's see here, finish and all right. So this will be the end of, and what is our number, Michael? Which program is this? Do you know?
This is program 42.
Okay, very good. All right, thank you. End of program 42, and we've gone from what page to what page? Page 55 to 55?
55 through 57.
Oh my goodness. That almost sounds like progress. Okay. And today is the 4th of December. And now, beginning of program 43, which will be 57 onward. And that will be on the 11th of December. Okay, friends. You know, all of this is a bit like going to medical school or something. The first part of the book is quite concrete in many ways. But we're, you know, getting to the point where we'll be working with the soul, and it will be perhaps a solar fire a bit more congenial to us. Meanwhile, we have the cosmic physical plane on which we will be evolving for thousands of more years. In the case of most all of us, I would say, and are the true spiritual part of our journey is only now beginning. Only now. So at least we know the areas of vibration into which we will be penetrating. And here, by the way, are the four types of atoms that DK uses so frequently in an analogical manner, and we will also. Okay, are there any thoughts, questions that you may have about what we've covered, or failing that, anything else in occultism which is of importance to you at the moment for consideration?
And I am looking for any hands raised or any comments or questions placed into the chat box. Not seeing any yet.
Michael, I have a question. When a hand goes up on the participants list, what do you do? Unmute the people by pressing the microphone?
Well, when they can raise their hand through the participants window.
Yeah.
And when they raise their hand, their name goes to the top of the list. So they're defined that way. And allow them to unmute themselves at that time.
They unmute themselves by pressing the microphone. Is that it?
That is correct.
Okay, I may have to deal with that in the discussion we're going to have a little bit later, and I'll be on my own, so you know, trying to just figure out how it works. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, what are we, you know, considering here? Just to remind us of the subjects. What is a sheath? A sheath is an externality, not an internality. Are even the subtle sheaths material? Is everything on the cosmic physical plane material? Is it a material plane? Are the cosmic planes above the cosmic physical material as well? And if they are, what kind of material might that be? At least we have some indication of the materiality of the etheric physical plane. Why doesn't he want to take up the sheaths of the higher planes? Well, that's maybe not our immediate problem, but we do organize those sheaths from the third initiation onward, and even in the case of the second initiation, the Buddhic vehicle begins to be organized. Do we get a sense of ourselves as the inner reality? Is it real to us that many objective factors could drop away and still we would be? Our inner reality would persist. We have to get the idea that all aspects of the personality are material, and just as material as the dense physical body is considered material. That there are centers of heat within the base of the spine and in the physical body. There's an analogy there, and it works through certain nerve pathways, which the student of esoteric healing will naturally want to know something about. And then he's also told us about the etheric body as providing the fuel to run the dense part. So we have active heat and we have latent heat, and both of these are part of the internal fires. And then basically we looked at the Tanmatras and the way to do that is probably, let's see, zoom and go down to, yeah. How it all starts with the solar logos. And according to certain powers that come from the solar logos, these powers being called Tanmatras, we build all the subplanes of the cosmic physical plane. We build our normal planes, you know, logoic, monadic, et cetera, et cetera. And we build the subplanes as well. And we've learned that in theosophy, or at least in this particular presentation, there are some terminological differences. Some things correspond exactly. This Anupadaka Tattva corresponds. Vayu Tattva corresponds. Agni Tattva corresponds. I'm not sure about the meaning of, it looks like Appa Tattva. Does that mean water? I'm not sure, but and I won't say it corresponds. Prithivi, is that it? Prithiva? It's not being, I can't read it too well here. A tattva, that is usually considered physical. But the Akasha tattva does not correspond. And so we'll just be aware of the differences and how we generate matter from the lowest structure on the plane above to the highest structure on the plane below. And that is done through the power of a new Tanmatra, which is sent forth from the solar logos and continues to build the vortices which descend through all of the planes and subplanes. Just a little bit of a summary. And by the way, just because DK does not show chakras on these levels does not mean that they don't exist. They do. And so the chakras are here given on the etheric part of any particular plane. And once the causal body is gone, then there will be correspondences to the chakras where the causal body used to be. And they will exist on the buddhic plane. They will exist on the atmic plane. 35, that'll make 35 vortices, making a master. They will exist on the monadic plane. That'll make 42 vortices, making a chohan. And they will exist on the logoic plane where that vorticular movement begins, making the 49 chakras or wheels of the seventh degree chohan. All right, then. That is kind of a quick rolling summary of what we have dealt with. And we just have to ask, are there any questions in general? Otherwise, we'll get on with preparation for the next presentation, which will be the vigil.
Well, Nolene has shared the terms correspond to earth, water, fire, and air. And I believe that is the four lower tattvas in the chart on page 56.
Yeah, if those terms do, I know that the word prithivi or something like prithiva, it is earth. I know Agni is fire and Vayu is air. And I just was not sure about the water correspondence. So that is that's a help to know. Thank you for that. But of course, you know, it seems to, if I could just find this, maybe I'll have to do it this way. There it is. Yeah, it just does not take it down to application in that which represents Earth. It seems to put the astral and the etheric physical as recipients on the same level of the energy of the seventh Tanmatra, instead of dividing it in such a way that each would have its own. But okay, that's good, Nolene, thank you. Prithivi Tattva, Earth. Apas Tattva, water, okay. Agni Tattva, fire, as we've said, and Vayu Tattva, air. Yeah, that makes sense. And every level of, every type of atom found on every sub-level, of which there are 49. And actually, when you get into sub-sub levels, DK says they too exist, then that makes 343 sub-sub levels. They all have matter, which is differentiated from one level to another. So it's all a question of numbers and arrangement. And maybe in occult chemistry or something of that nature, we could find at least some clues, but we're not going to solve this particular internal physics or internal chemistry. Not yet. But we get the idea. That's the important point. Okay, is there anything else?
Not seeing anything at this particular instant. Maybe it is time to wrap up so that you can prepare for the next event.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I certainly want to, you know, you're very brave to go through this kind of consideration. It's not easy material because it seems to be so concrete and so technical. And all of us are a lot more at home, I think, most of us are anyway, with solar fire than with the fire by friction of an earlier chain and an earlier system. I mean, we still have an inheritance of fire by friction, and we have to deal with it. We have to deal with the third aspect of divinity, but our real interest is in the soul and in the solar fire. And that's why he said that the middle section of the book, which is the really big section, would be the most widely read and would be the most popular. So, you know, you might just review, in other words, how do we differentiate one atom from another? It is by the arrangement and number of the basic constituent. The basic constituent on the cosmic physical plane is called the bubble in the koilon. Whether it is a divisible factor, it's just a tiny thing. There's something like in the etheric atom, I'm going to get my billions and millions mixed up here, but in the etheric permanent atom, there's something like 14 million, or is it 14 billion bubbles in the koilon. In the book, First Principles of Theosophy, it tells which it is. It might be million, I don't know. But anyway, a huge number of constituents that we call the bubbles in the koilon. And as we go higher and higher, the atoms simplify, the arrangement changes, the number of bubbles is reduced until we come to the very most simple type of atom found on the first sublevel of the logoic plane. So we're going to have, you know, this is the future of science, and the occult principles are going to be brought forward for consideration. And already there are scientists who are also theosophists who are trying to, you know, make that bridge between what Blavatsky and Besant and Leadbeater gave and what they know of advanced particle physics and, you know, other kinds of refined research, which are at the forefront of the modern physics. They're trying to make the bridge. It'll still be yet a while. The ether has to be reaccepted. It was dismissed as unnecessary back in the late 19th century with certain experiments which said we don't need that anymore. And it has to be reintroduced according to a new way of understanding. So we're really pretty deeply in matter here when we're studying the first part of the book, but fortunately it doesn't go on forever. So we will continue our work, and before long, the soul will take over. And I'm making little threads of connection anyway with more advanced parts of the book that deal with subjects that are more, let's say, interesting to us, and unless we happen to be a heavy fifth-ray type. Okay. So if that's it, we'll just close with the great invocation, and we'll get ourselves ready for the next presentation, which is going to be a discussion and a little meditation. Okay. Great invocation.
Would you like to change your screen share?
Why not? I'd be crazy to. Okay, there we go. Thank you. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Oh. Thank you, everybody, and love and blessings from the whole communications team. You know, we have a lot of studying to do, and our consciousness of how things work will expand as we give due diligent attention to these studies, even if we don't understand everything. You know, it's a book for initiates, but okay, we will understand more than we did before, and we will have a firm basis, a firmer basis concerning the foundation. You know, the third ray is called the builder of the foundation. And that foundation upon it rests the entire study of the soul and the monad. But let's get the foundation as solid as we possibly can. So we'll be seeing you before long, some of you, and thank you for being here. Tomorrow morning we have the Destiny of the Nations meditation at YouTube channel, the Soul of Nations, and then we'll keep going at 10 p.m. with our vigil. I don't think we're going to finish all the things Tuya has collected for tonight. I don't think we'll finish them all tonight. But we'll get started and we'll keep going. All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye for the moment. See you soon.